I was 12. Fueling at mid-on in a Slovenia versus Austria under-13s international at the Austria Cricket Stadium in Vienna. Bowling first, we had them 165 for 7 in the 19th over with 2 balls remaining in the innings. I knew they had about 50 too many for our side. Some of our players only picked up a cricket bat a month and a half ago, and only 6 of us could bowl with a straight arm. I was out of my depth. I had no idea what to do as a captain. The boy at the non-striker's end, Farhan, he was just 2 steps above, so much so that he actually knew that you should back up. Our coach at the cover boundary calls me over, gives me a whisper, and tells me to relay it to the bowler. After trying to decode the message into Slovene for about 3 minutes, the plan was set. The bowler runs in off 5 steps, stops, and knocks the bails off. He's on his way. We got him. Anyway, long story short, I pulled a Karen Pollard. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to the third innings. My name is Maxwell Charlesworth, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and good friend, Prasuk Jain. Prasuk, how are you going?
Not bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. You know what the worst part of that story was?
Nope.
He was on 96.
96 is becoming a hallmark these days. We have seen last week with Washington Sundar. Mm-hmm. Can't seem to forget that. We also saw it today with Gunnar Tillika scoring another 96 against West Indies. Mm-hmm. Just coming again and again.
Yeah, it's all equally as important innings. This Austria under-13s knock and Washington Sundar's 96.
Was better, even more important than Washington Sundar.
They faced better bowlers, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. But do you understand why it was a Karen Pollard I was pulling?
No, can you please explain?
Well, I didn't revoke the appeal. Yeah, I just apologized afterwards. And perhaps you could inform us why that is pulling a Karen Pollard.
And now it makes sense. So for those of you who don't know, Karen Pollard initiated and withheld an appeal for obstructing the field in the first ODI between West Indies and Sri Lanka, which, by the way, West Indies won eventually. Karen Pollard pulled something like that, which led to Dhanushka Gunatalika being dismissed. So basically what happened was Gunatalika defended a ball which stayed on the pitch. It was Karen Pollard bowling with not much pace, and he called for a run. The non-striker wasn't interested and sent him back. And while Gunatalika was going back, he touched the ball and the ball trotted off again from Karen Pollard, who wanted to pick up the ball and run someone out. And Karen Pollard appealed for an obstruction and the umpire gave it out. Now, whether or not it was dodgy, it's a tricky question. I don't think so. First of all, what eventually happened was the spirit of the game was compromised. I didn't really see it as a talking point, as a point where Karen Pollard should have appealed for it. It happened. It was an accident. I've watched that video countless times now, again and again, to see what exactly happened. And the ball was behind Gunatalika. He couldn't have possibly seen the ball. It was behind his shoe. And he just looked down because he played the shot. He knew where the ball is around. He just looked down to see where's the ball. And while going back in his crease, he just kicked the ball. And I don't think he would do it deliberately, because if he kicked it harder, it could have gone onto his stumps as well. He could have ran himself out. I don't think he was aiming to do that. And I don't see it as a obstructing the field incident. And unfortunately, he had to go off. What is your opinion on it?
Yeah, I've got the ifs about it. I don't like it. He admitted afterwards to Gunatalika that he didn't think he did anything wrong. But he just saw the video footage then, and now he's realized his mistake. No, he saw the replays on the jumbo, on the big screen at the ground. And all he had to do was tell the umpire, look, I revoke my appeal. That's it. That's all he had to do. That's all I had to do back then as well. But instead, he withheld the appeal. And it was a ridiculous appeal. It's ridiculous it was given out, because he didn't deliberately obstruct the ball. That's the thing. He didn't do it deliberately. I think he barely even knew where the ball was, let alone had the mental notion to decide to use his foot to kick it towards his stumps. Like, it makes no sense. But no, sorry, Pollard. You had your chance to revoke it on the field and you didn't, so you can't just go up and apologize afterwards. It's poor on his part. But in other less aggravating news, and also on the West Indies front, the West Indies have a new full-time test captain in Craig Brathwaite. Obviously, he filled in the role for Holder in their series win in Bangladesh earlier this year, and now he's been given the ropes full-time. Holder was captain for the last 5 years, and really, he had a struggling team behind him. Now they've sort of gathered their thoughts and found some recent success, or hopeful success, and now they've gone to Craig Brathwaite to really push that on. What are your thoughts on this, Prasoon?
Well, Brathwaite is a solid batsman, and he has been a promising opener for the Windies in the past years. Although the last 2 years weren't very good for him, he only averaged around 20. But in the whole career, he has averaged 32 with 800s and 2050s as an opener. And he has the perfect temperament for a captain. And on the other side, I think it's going to relieve Holder of the responsibility and duties, which I think he needs to focus more on his game and maybe, just maybe, finally get to bat higher. I want him to bat higher for the West Indies, and he's more than a bowling all-rounder. I think he is one of the better batsmen in the Windies side, and I hope this helps him.
Yeah. Obviously, Jason Holder had, or possibly still has, I probably should have checked, the number one test all-rounder ranking.
Yeah, he is the number one still, yeah.
Yeah, he's pivotal for the West Indies side, and maybe, yeah, as you say, relieving the captaincy duties from him will allow him to play more freely and maybe just clear up his mind a bit. Because it must have been a tough 5 years having to really shore up the batting, fix up the bowling at times as well, and just constantly, well, there's no other way to put it, constantly lose for a lot of the time. You got to feel for him a little bit. Craig Brathwaite coming in that remarkable series in Bangladesh. He captained well in Bangladesh. He uses bowlers nicely, especially. And especially with an undermanned West Indies side. It was a real big effort. And I think it's fair that he's rewarded for it. Although, who knows though? Holder might have also said, hey, maybe it's time for me to be done with the captaincy. Obviously, the ODI captaincy has gone to Karan Pollard as well. So, yeah, hopefully we see this as a new frontier for Jason Holder. And we see him really take that extra step up.
And he has also been a bigger part in the IPL, Jason Holder. With Sunrisers, he played a big part last year with that all-round ability and the changes in the ball and everything. So I think it's also good for him to divert his mind towards other forms of cricket while Brathwaite only plays one form of cricket. So it's good that he focuses on the red ball and Holder can do other things.
Yeah. Well, it seems no one is safe. Not even South African keeper captain Quinton de Kock, who has been relinquished of the ladder title, with Themba Bavuma taking over the whiteboard duties and the 33-year-old Dean Elgar managing the red side. Now, Bavuma is an interesting pick, I think. In total, he's played 14 white ball innings for the Proteas, but has been in and around the group for a long time. Obviously, with his 44 tests under his belt, people who follow South African cricket will know Themba Bavuma quite well. But is backing a captain for two T20 World Cups in the next few years, who has barely cemented his place in the side, a good call?
Well, he boasts a decent average. I think both in ODIs and T20s, in ODIs he averages around 55. And in T20s he averages around 35 with a strike rate of 133, which are perfect numbers for any player in any side. And he has shown captaincy talent in the past in the domestic setup. So I think it's going to come good for South Africa. But it's more a question about the team that is going to play around him. It's the same as the West Indies situation. Captain can only do so much. And with all the internal drama going around in the South African camp, I think it's going to be very interesting how the things pan out for them in all the formats in the future. And as you rightly mentioned, in the World Cup, we're going to see something. Hopefully, they can make it big in the World Cup this time. Haven't had a lot of luck with ICC events. And looking forward.
Yeah. So, on his captaincy talent, the last 2 years, he has taken the Lions to the CSA T20 title. So this year and last year, two in a row under his captaincy. And yeah, I think it's also a question with the South African side about the quality of the team around him. So it might be, although in the white ball setup, that's a bit better than what the issue Dean Elgar is going to be facing, I believe. So yeah, I'm happy for him. Obviously, South Africa's first black African captain, which is it's a brilliant achievement by him, and I wish him all the best. But yeah, it's just that his surroundings, the team members of his, that could produce some shortcomings.
Yeah, what else has produced shortcomings in the recent past? In this Johnny year, Besto. Especially? Rightly mentioned, but what else? It's the PSL.
Of course, the PSL.
Seven people, including six players, have been tested COVID positive. And that led to the tournament being called off in the middle. It's agreed for a restart in June following the IPL. But I don't see a lot of players. Well, I wouldn't say a lot of players, but a lot of players are going to back off. And a lot of talent pool may be reduced by then. So I'm not sure if you're going to see an exciting PSL as we saw in the first half. But it's not a good year for cricket because of COVID.
Yeah. And obviously in these trying times, having that many people isolated together proves to be increasingly challenging. And I think really it will be for the next year and a half until vaccines are properly rolled out. From what I've heard, though, it's not as if one person left the bubble, got infected, came back and infected his teammates. The infections were across teams. There were significant breaches of the biosecure bubble, in air quotes, by players, coaches, franchise owners, staff members. Pretty much any job title, there was a COVID breach. Not all those were infected, but there was breaches that can lead to infections, of course. And like you said about the talent pool being reduced, Dan Christian has actually left the tournament before it was cancelled due to that high number of cases appearing in the league. And especially in countries, they'll be struggling to get players from Australia and players from New Zealand to any place with low COVID numbers to go to Pakistan now to finish that league due to probably excess quarantine they'll have to do on the way back. And they're getting used to a life now without COVID and putting themselves at that risk. It's just that much of a bigger jump than for people like us who live in, where COVID has become a normality almost in places like here. One league that we'd be hoping against the situations that have occurred in the PSL and already taking preventions methods against breaches in the IPL is the IPL itself. Could you maybe break down what's happened on that front for us, Prasuk?
Here we are again, just a few months of gap into another season of what promises to be another blockbuster IPL season. Yet, we have a different format to get used to. Since we are only playing at six venues, including Ahmedabad, which doesn't have an IPL team, it was only fair to not include any home games for any team. So we're going to see a completely different format in terms of the crowd that is supporting, hopefully, and the sort of bubbles that the team are going through. We have seen in the past that the home advantage was huge in IPL. There was a big difference, big impact that the crowd had. So how it's going to work is every team, well, at any given point of time, there will be two venues in play. So, for instance, it's going to start with Mumbai and Chennai. So all the games, I think there are 10 games happening at Mumbai and Chennai in the first leg. And then they're going to move to Delhi and Ahmedabad, playing another 16 games. And then for the final leg, they're going to move to Kolkata and Bangalore, where they're going to play another 20 games. So this way, every team just needs to travel three times, which is very similar to what they faced last time in UAE. They had only three venues and they didn't have to travel a lot. So the teams preferred that as well. And that's going to help the teams to be in the biosecure bubble as well. And they're going to travel by chartered planes and the hotel is going to be nearby. So it's going to be very secure. They are planning a lot for that. And but the interesting thing is going to be that the teams will have to adjust their gameplay according to the venues. For instance, Mumbai Indians, they like to play on those bouncy, juicy Mumbai pitches. And now most of their games, they're playing in Chennai, which is completely opposite, which is slow and sluggish and spin-friendly. And Chennai, on the other hand, having used to that sort of a field, they're going to play a lot of games in Mumbai. So apart from the crowd, it's also going to be pitch conditions, which is going to play a lot. And it's going to be exciting in that terms because the teams will have to come out of their comfort zone and do something which they haven't done before.
Well, I've heard that there might be no crowds along with this new schedule. And is that true? And who are you tipping to take the tournament this year? Well, you know me, and you know my strict rule that I will not support any IPL franchise until my beloved Gujarat Lions are brought back into the tournament.
Well, at least...
My protest.
At least the playoffs are going to be played in Ahmedabad, so you can...
But it's not the Lions, though.
It's not, that's true, but I have a tip for you. Akshar Patel from Gujarat is playing in Delhi, so I suggest you to support Delhi.
I don't know.
Wink, wink.
I don't know. My other option's Bangalore, but I just can't bring myself to support Bangalore.
Just because of Sarfaraz Khan's ex-team.
Just because But, well, at least the games are returning to India this season. Obviously, with the previous edition being held in the UAE, and there were some problems there with the different sizes of the grounds and what different teams got off that for their net run rate kind of thing. But the same can't be said for the World Test Championship final, though. However, the move is much less drastic. Instead of being at Lord's, the final has instead been moved to 100 kilometers southeast to the Hotel Bowl in Southampton, because everyone knows there is no corona in Southampton, but 100 kilometers away in London, there's corona. The two finalists, New Zealand and India, obviously needing a biosecure bubble around the venue as we keep getting these optimistic rather than realistic venues, if you understand what I mean. We keep getting told this, oh, it's going to be played here, but really... That's 6 months away. It's not going to be played there. The world's not going to change that much in 6 months that we're going to be able to play there. It's going to be moved. Just tell us it's going to be in Southampton in the beginning. Does this play into anyone's hands more? And what do you actually think about it being held in England at all? Does it make sense right now?
It's funny you call it the Hotel Bowl just because it has a hotel in the stadium premises. But at least that helps in maintaining the bubble. That's one of the reasons it has been chosen as the venues. Although... Not officially, I think, but Sourav Ganguly had a slip of tongue moment, and he confirmed that it's the confirmed venue. New Zealand is going to play two tests against England just before the final, although I think in different venues, but still having that suitability to the conditions might play into their hands. But the Rose Bowl is seen to be very seam friendly. And in terms of the seam department, I think both teams are very evenly poised. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Indian seamers perform in England before the England tour. I think we all know how New Zealand bowlers are, with Bolt and Southee and Wagner just hitting the mark nonstop. But I hope to see Bumrah and Siraj and Ishan Sharma there as well. It's going to be an even contest, and as of now, my only hope is for it to go into the fifth day. I want it to last for full 5 days. I don't want to miss out on any test cricket anymore.
Well, as long as they don't bring in the Ahmedabad groundsman for the test, then it probably should, I reckon.
I have no comments.
I declined to comment. Well, in other test news, Afghanistan have their first ever double century in test, with Hashmatullah Shahidi scoring 200 not out in the ongoing second test against Zimbabwe. He is quickly becoming one of my favourite players, if not just for his first name. He goes up there on the list with Hardik Pandya and Quinton de Kock. That's Hashmatullah. Did you catch any of his innings? And if so, what did you think of it?
Well, it was a very, very typical test innings. Very gritty, very patient. Just the perfect innings that I like. He faced 443 balls for his 200. It was, although it was a flat deck, but it's still coming from a side like Afghanistan, which doesn't really play a lot of games, especially test cricket. It was a very special knock for him to go out there and convert that. The Afghanistan skipper declared as soon as he reached the double turn. And at that situation, at that moment of time, his innings already put Afghanistan in a winning position in the game. Now we see Zimbabwe have to follow on. They are already in the follow on after the third day. And I don't see Afghanistan losing this game from here on. Looking forward to seeing more of him.
Obviously, the Afghani skipper, Ashgar Afghan, who is so patriotic, he changed his last name to Afghan. You mentioned that it was a really typical test innings. And one thing I really like about this Afghan side is that they haven't taken the same approach as other newly appointed test nations in recent times. And what I mean by that is they normally try and essentially take their white ball side, which are normally they're more competitive in, because it's easier to be more competitive over a short period of time. So they normally try and take their white ball side and convert them into test cricketers. Whereas Afghanistan, if they haven't really done that, or when they started doing that in the beginning, they've at least now put pretty much a stop to it. Only four of the players in the Afghan side for this test played in the nation's last ODI against Ireland in January. One of those being Hashmatullah Shahidi. Then the other three were Rahmat Shah, Ashgar Afghan and Rashid Khan. And while Hashmatullah has played 41 ODIs for his country, he has shown that there is proper test match batting stocks in Afghanistan rather than just a prolonged ODI innings, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, we have seen enough from Afghanistan in all formats, and I think they should be given more opportunities to showcase their talent and get that match practice going on. Something I think ICC is looking into for the near future, to have more associate teams playing more cricket with each other. And there's a lot to be seen from these countries, Ireland, Afghanistan and Zimbabwe, and all these countries have so much of talent. And as you said, it's more competitive to play a shorter format, but these players are showing what they are made of in the test cricket, and I would love to see more.
Yeah, Afghanistan are going to be a powerhouse of cricket. Well, maybe not a powerhouse, but they're going to be, I reckon, up to a Sri Lanka kind of level, modern-day Sri Lanka level, very quickly. That not only do they have now what seems to be sort of a working first-class system, because we have to remember that this is a war-torn country. It's not as easy to just say, okay, let's set up a first-class competition. I believe just last year, there was a suicide bomber at a cricket match, showed up to the ground. It's a difficult situation they're in, but they have, as compared to Ireland, for example, they have a lot of players in the PSL. They have players in the IPL, in the Big Bash, in the BPL. They have players everywhere. Rashid Khan, Mujibur Rahman, players like that. And not just them, it's increasing. And I think that the more exposure they get, they're going to really go far. It's kind of like the entire team is almost like a mystery spinner. you just don't know what's coming out. Because I believe Rashid Khan said he learned how to bowl leg spin off YouTube videos or off old Shane Warne clips on YouTube. It'd be exciting to see. Yeah.
I hope the Netherlands can play a bit more cricket as well.
Yeah, I haven't played an international match in over a year. It's a bit ridiculous, Mr. ICC. You're listening, Mr. ICC, I don't know who you are, but it's ridiculous. Please fix this. So, now, Prasuki, I'm going to give you a number, and you're going to have to guess what it is, okay? It's our favorite segment. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You ready for the number?
Tell me.
50.2.
Is that CSK's combined strike rate in the 2021 IPL season?
Close. I believe that's going to be 49.6. I think I have my money on. That is actually the percentage of people who watch our videos on YouTube and are unsubscribed. So if you are one of those people, please give us a subscribe. It would really help us out, and it will help you to stay up to date with all the cricket news, previews, and reviews that you need. That's all the time we have for today. Make sure you send us any questions you would like answered into our YouTube comments or Instagram DMs. My name has been Maxwell Charlesworth, and alongside me, as always, has been Prasuk Jain. It's been a pleasure having your company, and we will see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.